Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a look at an opportunistic and cynical move by a US hedge fund, Sara Capital, and their attempt to take over a number of UK investment trusts by removing the current board and placing their own appointments in their place. And to do that, we're very kindly joined by Karen Braid, who is the chair of Keystone Positive Change Investment Trust, one of the investment trusts in question. Karen, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Oh, pleasure. Thank you for having me and giving me an opportunity to talk to your listeners. So, yes, I'm very, very grateful.
Thank you, Karen. So before we get into it, I think it would be good for listeners if you could give us an introduction, first of all, to yourself, Karen, but also Keystone, and then we'll go from there and discuss the current situation.
So I'm the chair of Keystone Positive Change, which is an investment trust which is being managed by Baillie Gifford, and we have a global impact strategy. It's a small company, it's only about 150 million sterling, and it has suffered from a very difficult performance alongside, a lot in the industry. Sadly, we suffered from the rotation that took place in early 2021, February 21, and it's been very challenging. So I'm one of five on the board. We're all independent directors. We moved the strategy, we moved the company actually to this strategy in February 2021. So our timing was shocking. It was very, very unfortunate. And so in recognition of that, we start to try and address, boards can do a number of things because they're not managing the money. They've got, they can use gearing, they can try and do buyback shares, they can engage with the managers to tweak the strategy or tweak the team, or indeed you can introduce things like continuation votes. And all these things we have been working on, quite seriously in the last 3 years. In an effort to address what is being a very difficult time, both for us and for, across the board, really.
The topic of this podcast is going to be that the tactics being employed by Sara Capital to take control of a number of investment trusts, including Keystone. And there has been an impassioned response from the industry so far. There's been comments from Frostro, who is an advisor to a number of investment trusts, saying that Sara are looking to rip you off, referring to investors there and using an opportunistic moment to muscle in and take over control of these trusts. Emma Bird from Winterfloods, who we kindly had on the podcast very recently, said that the statements and the proposals do not appear to be in the best interests of shareholders. Investment trust analyst John Newlands has said the industry should be very, very concerned. So, Karen, please could you provide quite a broad overview, if you may, of the current situation and what's happening at Keystone and the seven other investment trusts that are being targeted by Sara?
So all seven investment trusts received requisition notice just before Christmas to say that Sara wanted to, if you have more than 10% of the shares in a company, you're entitled to do this. And Sara has more than 10% in each of these seven investment trusts. They have up to as much as 29, actually, in my case. And so they requisitioned these meetings saying that they proposed resolutions to remove every single member of the independent boards of all seven trusts. And the proposal was then to replace the boards with their own nominees. And rather baffling, they have nominated a staff member for one person for six of the boards and another guy for the seventh board. And then an supposedly one of their nominees who's deemed to be independent. So, and this will then enable them to, that they say their intention is to potentially appoint themselves as manager And then they will adopt a SABA strategy and manage these trusts in a different way from each of these seven trusts are being managed at the moment and following the strategies at the moment. So it's quite sort of it was pretty shocking certainly in my case, because I've been engaged with SABA over a number of occasions since I first became aware of them on my register at the end of 2023. When I first spoke to them in the fourth quarter 23, I encouraged them to come to the AGM in early 24, because we were planning to introduce a number of measures to try and help address the concerns shareholders had about performance and discounts and, you know, a lot of the other sector-wide issues that we were trying to address. And subsequently, we realised as SABA built their stake, with the company size being such what it is, and as the liquidity just got more and more difficult. I mean, the more shares they were buying, the worse my liquidity becomes. And wealth managers particularly really dislike that. So we realised by the summer of last year that, you know, we needed to sort of talk to SABA and say, look, what are we going to do here? Because this is really very unhelpful. I'm buying back shares. I've put a continuation vote in place. This was all very well received by my shareholders in February this year. But now you're continuing to build a stake. And his message was, we want a cash exit. And so we I responded that I would consult more widely and come back to him. So we did. And the feeling in the market and talking to the shareholders I was able to talk to and who our manager spoke to, was many of them were quite supportive of the strategy, recognizing that the performance hadn't been good at all, but they understood why. You know, they understood that we'd entered this horrible period where it was like a brutal derating in the whole industry. You know, high interest rates, high inflation, and there was lots of headwinds in the markets, and so. A number of our shareholders said, you know, we are patient and we're happy to roll into a sister fund if that's the option available to us. But we wanted to give cash, an uncapped cash exit, to those investors who wanted to exit, and SABA included, because that's what they said they wanted. So we announced this scheme in September, and we published the detail in early December. And it is to give our shareholders, all of them, if they want an uncapped cash exit, they can have it. That's what we said, and the plan was to do it this next month. And for those who, for tax purposes or because they wanted to stay in the strategy, they could roll over into the open-ended fund, which is the Baillie Gifford Positive Change Fund, which is much larger and much more liquid. And largely it mirrors the Keystone Fund on the listed equity side. So... I contacted SABA once this requisition notice was placed, because I explained to him, in Keystone's case, we have a scheme in place to hand cash back to our shareholders. And so for you to then introduce this requisition meeting is going to take a lot of time and cost to do it. And this is shareholders' money that you're spending, that you're asking me to spend to do these meetings. And frankly, my shareholders have made it very clear when we announced the scheme in December, when we kind of published the detail in December, the response was very unanimously supportive. Not one shareholder came back to me saying, this is not what we want. So I felt very, I was sort of baffled as to why they were doing it, but I felt confident that I could persuade him to back down and come to some arrangement. And he refused. His view was that they will win this requisition meeting. And what I think what's happened here, and it's for all seven of us, is that we have very large retail shareholders on our registers, very, very large numbers of retail shareholders. In my case, it's 40%. And traditionally, the retail do not vote. They just don't come out and vote. And I think my last vote was 20% turnout, and most of that was not retail. So SABA are banking on the fact that all these retail investors will do as normal, which is not vote. And I can understand why they don't vote. You know, we have a well-regulated environment here in London. We have independent boards who generally do a very good job. You know, if there is an issue that's going on, like a corporate action, then investors will be notified. Otherwise, they tend not to vote. And I think SABA are taking advantage of that that situation, which is why it's the work that we're all now doing, and I'm certainly doing, is trying to get the message out, the importance of people actually voting their shares in these forthcoming meetings. And in my case, it's on the 3rd of February. And those votes need to be placed for all the, I think all the meetings, bar Edinburgh Worldwide, we have to get our votes in by the 22nd of January, maybe the 23rd of January. And that then will allow our shareholders to take a view on whether they want to, you know, support Saba and taking, appointing their own two nominees, you know, appointing themselves as manager and introducing this new Saba strategy. I and the board are not recommending that because we have a plan in place already to return cash to our shareholders, which is what we know our shareholders, most of them want.
Thank you. So I'd like to take an investor's perspective now, if you may.
Sure.
And look at the potential outcomes and then weigh up the differences between your proposals and what could happen if Saba takes control of Keystone and indeed the other investment trust. So what do you see as a likely scenario as an outcome of Saba being successful in their requisition?
If they're successful in the requisition, in my case, then I think, I mean, I the board feel very strongly we need to find a way to return cash to our shareholders. So we are very confident that if we just get the shareholders to come out and vote, Saba will not win this meeting. And that will then allow us to go back to what we want to do, which is to return the cash to the shareholders. So that's our entire focus right now, is and we will do that. And there are things that we can do. If we feel that we're going to lose that meeting, then, you know, we'll have to go back to the drawing board and come up with some ideas. But we're pretty confident that once investors realise, the shareholders realise they need to vote, they will vote, and hopefully we will get to the, you know, the magic number we need to win the 50-50 resolution, which is required for this general meeting. I think that's the view, the approach that I'm sure that's what the other boards are doing as well. I mean, I'm not discussing this with other boards. I've got enough on my plate, just doing my own company. And so that's what we're working towards. We need to find a way through. And Saba have said that if I win this meeting, they will then talk to me. They will then discuss it. And I'm confident we will find a way forward to, you know, resurrect. I will have to adjourn the meetings that we had planned to deliver this, you know, cash return. So once we have the general meeting and hopefully we will win it, then Saba have agreed that they will discuss a way forward with us. And that will definitely include cash return to our shareholders. So that's my objective.
Perfect. Thank you. So I myself described that the tactics being employed by Saba as cynical, and that of course has been echoed throughout the industry. And I think it would be good if we could add a little bit of context to that, Karen. And you did mention the steps that you've taken to engage with Saba, but I think it would be good if we could go into a little bit more detail, if you may. And I think that would provide some background to, you know, their thinking, possibly their plans, and really give listeners an idea of their tactics that they're putting in place in their approach to these requisition meetings.
So you know, I in my case, as a chair, the one job you do have is, you know, you need to reach out and meet your shareholders as often as you can. And in my experience, most shareholders, not retail, I'm talking about wealth managers and institutions, they actually really like to meet the people managing the money directly. They're not that interested in meeting members of the board unless there's a problem. So in most cases, you might expect to meet your shareholders once a year. They tend not to come to the AGMs. They tend, you know, you might meet them at conferences, or you just say, look, we'd like to come and meet you. And you set up you might do it with your fund manager, for example. So in my case, I have met most of my shareholders, but not that frequently, because, you know, that's just the way it works. Whereas they have met my fund managers regularly. So that's how we normally manage the relationship with our shareholders. And if a new shareholder comes on to the register, as in the case of Saba, my first instinct is to reach out to them. If they haven't contacted me, I certainly will contact them. And that's what I did in the case of Saba. I first became aware of them in the fourth quarter of 23. And we were puzzling, you know, that they have a reputation. We know they can be quite aggressive, they're activists. I don't have a problem with that. as long as I understand, you know, as long as we're honest and open with each other as to what our objectives are and what we're trying to achieve, I don't see why we can't work together on you know, addressing their concerns and understanding the wider. I mean, I have to take care of the wider stakeholder group, not just one single investor, but you have to take them into account. So that's why I called them and said, you know, I introduced myself. And we had a long conversation about the performance and the discount. And, you know, you and many of your listeners will be well aware it's gone on for a very prolonged period and it's very, very frustrating. And there are a number of measures that I spoke to Seb about. I said, you know, we're going to introduce a number of measures to try and really tackle this. And so that was fourth quarter 23. I asked them to come to the AGM, which was the beginning of 24. And it was early February, probably. And he didn't attend. He didn't vote. They just didn't come. And at that meeting, we had very wide support for our proposed continuation vote, which was to be put in place to allow the strategy 5 years to play out. So therefore, the continuation vote would take place in early 27. And a number of our shareholders welcomed that because they had the patience. They knew the strategy needed time to play out, but they wanted some certainty at the end of a period. And that's what we gave them. And then the other thing is we introduce the idea of buying back shares. And there's a lot of debate about the, you know, does buying back shares actually move the discount? It might do in the short term, does it do in the long? You know, there's a lot of debate about the merits of it. And I've heard both arguments passionately delivered, pro and against. Anyway, we felt it was accretive to NAV and we should do it. We should demonstrate to our shareholders that we are listening to them. So we announced a buyback program. And last year I bought back 5% of the company. Which is pretty punchy, you know. So I didn't hear from Saba following those announcements, but I just watched them building up their stake. And as I said to you earlier, you know, building a stake reduces liquidity, and that is a real issue, especially in a small company like ours. So that's when I contacted them again in the summer. So they never reached out to me. It was always me contacting them. So I contacted them this last summer, and I said, you know, your 20% stake, it's worrying me because of the liquidity. Can we discuss, you know, what you want? You know, what are your plans? How are we going to get around this? And he said, actually, I think it's got to the stage now where we would like a cash exit. So that was in the summer. I agreed that we would go away and do a consultation, and we would then come up with a plan to address both his request, but also what my other shareholders believed. And as a result of that consultation, we put out an RNS in early September to say that we had a plan to return cash to shareholders, and the detail would be forthcoming. And Saba messaged via my advisors that they were they liked the direction of travel. They just wanted to see the detail. So a month later, I believe my advisors, I think there was probably three or four more calls with Saba, or you know, we emailed with Saba, and the last three, they refused to engage. So then I, and this was calls before we actually published the detail in early December. Because if you speak to them about the detail, that means they're inside and that means they can't trade. So most shareholders don't like to have those conversations until quite late in the day. So my last, you know, I reached out to the Saba the day before we were due to publish, but they said no, they wouldn't talk. So we published, and then it was a few weeks later this requisition notice was announced, which you know really surprised me because of the you know the plan we had already announced. And I then contacted Saba and I said, we really need to talk about this. And we had a meeting on the 2nd of January, and that's when we agreed to disagree as to who was going to win the requisitioned meeting, and agreed that if I were to win, if I could get my shareholders to come out and vote, and I was pretty confident that we would, you know, stop Saba taking control of the company as a minority investor. I just felt that was, you know, not acceptable, and I felt confident that my shareholders would agree if they voted. So he agreed that we would then talk. So I've had no contact since that conversation the 2nd of January. Other than from, basically I've been asked by their lawyers not to contact them anymore, not to reach out to them to the moment.
Okay, thank you. So, Cameron, you mentioned earlier the importance of retail investors in this process. And that's something that I'd like to drill down into now. Saba, they have just under 30%, 29%, and I believe the threshold is 50%. With the retail investor holding 40% of the trust shares, how important is it that they go out and vote in big numbers? Can you win the requisition meeting without their support, or
No,
does
I
everything
can't.
hinge on?
No, the retail is critical to this. Retail represent 40% of the register. Wealth managers represent about 25, and so even if, and I know it's not possible, but even if wealth managers voted every single vote in support of the board's recommendation, which is to vote against Saba's resolutions, I would still be 4 or 5% short. So I really, really need the retail investors to come out and vote.
Thank you. I mean, for any retail investors listening to this that are a holder of Keystone or any of the other trusts, it's a very simple process, I believe, Karen. Like any other corporate action, AGM meeting, your trading platform will provide you with a message and a means to do so. So it's not a case of having to come along to the meeting. You can
No.
do it simply a few clicks from your button. Is it as easy as that, Karen?
Yes, so 35% of my register is held through platforms. So I'm conscious that most of the are my investors, and therefore many, if they're listening now, will actually be able to vote via their platform. In my case, I'm with Hargreaves Lansdown. I think that's probably one of the bigger ones. I actually have opted in for information flow from Hargreaves. So it's probably easier for me, but I think Hargreaves will have emailed everybody. They should have emailed everybody to tell them about this vote coming up. And so what you have to do is through the website. You can't through you cannot do it through your app. You have to go onto the website, and you have to log in, and you have to go into your inbox and read the information that's been sent to you. And you will see there's a tab for shareholder meetings. And when you click on that tab for shareholder meetings, it will set out the all the meetings that are coming up in relation to any of your shares that you're holding. The date that they give, certainly in the Hargreaves case, is the date that you need to vote your share by. It's usually 3, 4, 5, even 6 days before the actual meeting itself. So it's important that investors, that's why I said earlier, really please, people should vote if they can by the 22nd of January, to cover off, just to make sure there's no. It gives the platforms time to assemble all the votes and convey them over correctly, because then we have to make sure that the votes are put in correctly and the IDs are correct, etc., etc. So there's some admin involved. And for those who don't have access to platforms, there are pages, and I'm sure all the trusts are doing this. I know the three Baillie Gifford trusts have done this. There is pages for each of the trusts, and you go to the Keystone Positive Change website, and you'll find a page explaining exactly how to vote and what to do, but with your proxies. And there are numbers and email addresses for people for you to contact directly for help. And I've spoken to the people who are supporting us in this administration of this whole process. And on day one, after we issued our RNS asking people to come out and vote and say no to these resolutions, we had individual private investors ringing up. So it is working. People are engaging. And my advisor said they got calls from individual investors saying, "We really, really want to vote here. It's really important we have our say. How do we do it?" So there's a lot of support out there via your platform or directly through the Investment Trust webpage. Please just y use those resources.
Indeed, I use AJ Bell myself, my SIP, and my general, and it's a very easy process. They generally email over a notification, but in any case, if you go into your corporate actions tab, it's very easy to navigate to, and as I say, few clicks of a button, and you can place your vote. So.
But I'm conscious that for many people, and they've never actually voted before. So give people should give themselves time just to figure it out. Because once you've done it, you realize actually it's pretty straightforward. It's not difficult. But to do it the first time, it might take a bit longer. So give yourselves time. You know, plan ahead, please.
Yes. Yeah. Do certainly go and have a look at that as soon as you can. But just to finish off now, Karen, when is the deadline that people need to go out and place their votes?
So my meeting's on the 3rd of February. Herald is actually the first one up. I think they're up on something like the 22nd of January. So they're very soon. And then myself and US Growth, I think, are on the 3rd of February. Then the two Henderson funds are on the 4th of February. And then the CQS, I think, is on the 5th of February. And then EWIT, Edinburgh Worldwide, will be... I don't think they've announced their date yet. So the bulk of us are going in the first week of February. And therefore, votes will need to be placed via the platforms, particularly, I would say, latest 22nd January, 23rd January.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So just a quick note to listeners, do check out the Investment Trust Centre on the UK Investor Magazine. There will be some coverage of the Saba approach to these investment trusts in the coming weeks and months. We'll hear more. So there'll be a link actually in the notes to this podcast that will be able to take you through to the Investment Trust Centre on the UK Investor Magazine website. So Karen, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Pleasure, pleasure. And as I said to you, once we manage to, you know, in all hope that we do manage to fight these resolutions, we, the board, are very committed to returning cash to our shareholders. So Keystone shareholders, you will get your cash back. Just come out and vote.
Yes. And I think, Karen, you know, this is a particularly interesting topic, and you know, it's probably going to be worth a follow-up conversation.
Delighted. Yes.
Yes. So you'd be more happy to have you back on the podcast after that. You know, best of luck. And you know, just a final note to any investors in the investment trust, you know, do go out and vote, check the corporate actions section of your platforms and place your vote. So Karen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Pleasure. Bye-bye.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.